Hello again from the Baltimore Sun. I'm Dan Roderick, Sun columnist, and welcome to Roughly Speaking, the podcast of the Baltimore Sun. We're coming to you from our news offices in Port Covington in the south of Baltimore. Got a lot of news to cover today. We're going to talk about what's going on with the investigation of Mayor Catherine Pugh of Baltimore and the Healthy Holly scandal. And also a lot of talk about, this week anyway, of Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland, the Republican governor in his second term, running for president of the United States, challenging Donald Trump. With me today, Herb Smith, professor of political science, emeritus? Are you emeritus yet?
Well, after May 25th, yeah. our commencement, I will be.
You'll be emeritus of McDaniel College, formerly Western Maryland College. It's nice to have you with us.
Well, it's wonderful to be here.
And our other guests, Andy Green, editorial page editor of the Baltimore Sun, and Luke Broadwater, who's covering state politics now. So anyway, Andy, nice to see you.
Thanks, Dan.
Luke, let's start with you today.
Sure.
We woke up this morning to news that the FBI and the Internal Revenue Service were conducting raids in Baltimore City.
Yes, this is the first confirmation that we've had on the record that the investigation into Mayor Catherine Pugh's business dealings has gone federal. We knew the state prosecutor was investigating. We knew there were many, the ethics board, the inspector general, many other tentacles here. But now we know the FBI, the IRS are on the case, and they are serving a bunch of search warrants around town as we speak. They've hit City Hall. They've hit the mayor's home. They've hit a nonprofit she's affiliated with. They've hit her lawyer's office. They've hit a top aide or an aide to Mayor Pugh as well, his home. So it is, it's really intensifying. This investigation is widening and intensifying as we speak.
I was thinking all along through here, the more we learned about Catherine Pugh's sales of her books, in particular that, when we were going to see some federal interest here. And I imagine the Internal Revenue Service and the U.S. Attorney's Office, there's been quite a bit of interest.
Right.
Andy Green.
Yeah, we reporters for The Sun have asked her, did you pay taxes on this income that we have documented that she has admitted to getting from the Healthy Holly book? She said yes. We asked her, can we see your tax returns? She said no. So, you know, obviously a search warrant doesn't mean that you have committed a crime, doesn't mean you'll even be charged with a crime. But the fact that the IRS is there is a pretty strong indication that they're looking into that angle.
Yeah.
It's a rather large red flag, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. Yeah. This is the second mayor of Baltimore City who's had her home raided by law enforcement authorities, the last one being Sheila Dixon in 2010, 2009.
I looked this up. It was summer of 2008 that her house was raided.
Oh, wow.
A year and a half later, she went on trial, and a month after that, she resigned. So the time from house raid to resignation was more than a year and a half in her case.
I had a terrible flashback this morning. I remember being outside of Mayor Dixon's house while that was happening and watching them cart out the boxes one after one, and to see the nearly the identical scene playing out with a mayor just two mayors later, these law enforcement agents carrying out box after box from her house. It was amazing. It was surreal.
You'll recall that back with Sheila Dixon, there was this mysterious blue cooler they took out of the house, and everybody was wondering what the heck that is. Yeah. With this time, there's not a lot of question. They're pulling out boxes labeled Healthy Holly, fruits come in all the colors of the rainbow. So we have a better idea what's going on this time.
Herb, I've been responding at times to people who say there's a long history of corruption in Baltimore City. And I mean, I've been here for 43 years. You've been around longer than I have. Sheila Dixon, yeah. Mayor Pugh, yeah. And recently in the police department, we've seen the gun trace task force corruption. But, I mean, from time to time, there are these.
Well, you never heard that about Dew Burns. You never heard that about William Donald Schaefer. You never heard that about Kurt Schmoke.
I mean, no. So I mean, there isn't. I wouldn't say there is a long history of this.
No,
I mean, there's
not at all.
Obviously,
there's corruption. But Maryland, as a state, has more ethics commissions and ethics boards than I think virtually any other state. As a reaction to the kind of culture of corruption that we fostered back in the 60s and 70s, after Bobby Kennedy as Attorney General, to his everlasting credit, unleash the U.S. attorneys against both Republicans and Democrats. Before then,
right.
it had been pretty much a partisan game.
And let's remember, the real nest of corruption at that point was Baltimore County, not city.
It was suburban. Yeah. At one point in the 1970s, Baltimore County and Anne Arundel County executives were indicted.
Right. One former Democrat and one a Republican.
Right, right. Yes. Joe Alton, Dale Anderson.
And then the
state's attorney of Baltimore County. And Ted Agnew, Spiro Agnew, Vice President of the United States, had been Baltimore County Executive and Governor of Maryland.
And got two free bags of groceries every week from his work in the Baltimore County Zoning Appeals Board. I always thought that was that was amusing.
Yeah.
It showed his true worth.
Sort of a reference to Bagman there.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we heard from Governor Hogan today, too. Governor Hogan came out and said that Mayor Pugh should resign.
Yes, he did. You know, he had called earlier this month for the state prosecutor to investigate under the state under state law. He's one of a handful of people who has the authority to ask for an investigation. He did that, and now he's taken the step of calling for her to resign. That follows calls from the entire city council, the entire Baltimore delegation to the House of Delegates, and the pro-business Greater Baltimore Committee in asking the mayor to resign.
Let's not leave out Peter Francho, of course, the comptroller.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
One of the early adopters.
And the Baltimore Sun.
We've now called on her to resign three times as of today.
All right, I want to ask you a question about that. I don't recall in the Sheila Dixon episode at what point we called for her to resign, if the Sun ever
very
called.
Late, yes.
Late. Was after she had gone on trial?
Yes, yeah.
So here we have calls for resignation before anybody's been charged with anything, starting with Mayor Pugh. So people who are listening and wondering, wait a minute, what did she do wrong? Why are you calling for her resignation? Let's understand that for a moment, just for a moment.
Well, I would say the short answer is we learned something from the Sheila Dixon episode that we should have probably come to that point much sooner because, you know, first of all, with Sheila Dixon, the issue was not just what she was put on trial for and certainly not just what she was convicted for. There was a long string of unethical behavior well documented by the Sun dating back for years.
To when she was city council president.
To when she was city council president, right. And you know, we saw then the utterly devastating effects on the city of having a mayor so tarnished, so compromised by ethical questions over such an incredibly long period of time. Watching her go on trial, you know, I think we essentially learned that we waited too long that time. The other difference here is, you know, I think other people in the city learned that too. We have a city council that's less compliant, less quiescent than the city council was then. The fact that all 14 of them, and let's say this is not just the Young Turks, this is also, you know, the Ed Reisingers and Mary Pat Clarks of the world signing on to this letter too, you know, when all 14 of them say you've got to go, there comes a point when you say you cannot possibly be an effective leader if every member of the city council says you need to resign.
Okay, but why? I mean, let's just do it for people who are wondering, scratching their heads, what did she do wrong besides sell books?
What it appears is she used her power and influence as a member of the University of Maryland Medical System Board of Directors, which she got by virtue of being an elected official, to personally profit. She also personally profited from a number of businesses and individuals who do business with the city. Further suggestion that she was profiting off of her personal influence and power. And there, as we have documented on The Sun, incredible questions about the finances of all this, where the money went. The numbers she has provided simply do not add up. And so particularly in the wake of the Gun Trace Task Force scandal, in the wake of the Daryl D'Souza scandal, you know, learning the lessons of the Sheila Dixon episode, I think the city is not ready to go through that again.
And next time the voters have to get it right. I mean, Baltimore deserves much better than Sheila Dixon or Mayor Pugh.
Yeah.
Absolutely no question about
this. I recalled in a recent column why people voted for Catherine Pugh. A lot of people voted for Catherine Pugh because it looked like the alternative was Sheila Dixon.
Right.
She was right there on her heels. And people who did not want to go back to Sheila Dixon ended up voting for Catherine Pugh, either because they liked her, like what she said, or because they were worried about the default, which would have been Sheila Dixon.
And she had a relatively good reputation in Annapolis as a state senator.
State senator, yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple of red flags that emerged late in that campaign with some concerns about campaign finance or walking around money, things like that. But I don't think you could have extrapolated from those indications to what we have now.
Okay. So we have all these calls for resignation. The mayor is still on leave, supposedly recuperating from pneumonia. Are we going to hear – what do you think might happen next? Does anyone have a thought about that, Luke?
I mean, there are several options of things that could happen. One, she could resign, as everyone's demanding. Two, she could continue to stay on leave. And Andre Davis, the city solicitor, has said that the city charter is silent on how long she may remain on leave, and she could continue to be paid. And Jack Young, the acting mayor, could run the city, and she could await the fallout of the investigation. Three, she could walk in the door to City Hall tomorrow if she wants to and say, Jack, get out of my chair. I'm back.
Yeah.
And that would create this is analysis, but it would create a political maelstrom. And I can only.
You want me to say that? Yeah. That would create a political maelstrom.
That's true.
I noticed the words of Jack Young, the mayor ex officio right now, who said he would hate to see that. Use the word hate. Hate to see that happen.
Yeah, he's been really put in an awkward spot in all of this.
I would say.
So he did not sign on this letter from the 14 council members. He happened to be previously scheduled for a meeting with the Sun editorial board the morning that news broke. We obviously wanted to get him in here and say, hey, what's going on? How's the city running? You know, is Catherine Pugh calling you every 5 minutes to tell you what to do? Answer, no, he has not heard from her. And so we asked him about that, and he said, look, you know, I can't get involved in that. People would see it as self-serving if I'm calling on her to resign. I'm just staying out of that. And I respect that. I think that's a good decision for him. But at the same time, he's confronted day after day after day with the impossibility of the situation in which he finds himself to say that, you know, it's clear, as clear to him as it is to everyone else, that she could not come back and be an effective leader of the city with so many people united against her in the political community, in the business community, and otherwise. And so he has come up with various locutions for how to express this. Most recently, he was concerned that her feelings would be hurt or something if she came back and people were shunning her. So he's danced around this. I think he kind of has to dance around this.
I think he knows, which is what you were saying, that when he said, I hate to see it, I think what he was saying is not, I hate to see it because then I wouldn't be mayor. But it would tear the city apart.
Yeah.
Worse.
No, I got that from it. Yeah. I got that from it. I thought it was just strongly worded.
The other thing that's really important here is that Mr. Young, when he came into this situation, said immediately, look, I am not running for mayor. I do not want to run for mayor. Once upon a time, I wanted to be mayor, but I've come to decide city council president is the job for me. I'm running for that. And I think that has taken a lot of the pressure off of this situation.
I had a list, Herb, of things under the title, The Last Thing Baltimore Needs. You know, I had The Last Thing Baltimore Needs is another story in the New York Times saying that we're in utter collapse. The Last Thing Baltimore Needs is a story in the national press saying that we lead the nation in Amazon packages being stolen from people's steps. And then I get to The Last Thing Baltimore Needs is another mayor embattled, accused of, at worst, corruption, right, at the least, unethical conduct. And to be in this sort of chaos, disarray.
Or John Oliver mocking Mayor Pugh last week tonight on HBO.
Yeah. It's gotten plenty of national
15
press.
15 minutes there.
Yeah, yeah. So, but here we are again. And if the mayor doesn't quickly resign, and I actually don't see that happening because I see resignation from her position as a bargaining chip with prosecutors, should this ever reach that point where she's actually charged?
Well, Agnew used that, way back in 73.
And it was part of Sheila Dixon's final arrangement, right?
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people remember the Dixon case for the gift card theft. But the thing where she actually stepped down from office as part of the plea deal was a second conviction for perjury on the ethics forums. And that is, one of the things our reporting has shown in Mayor Pugh's case is that she did not disclose the Healthy Holly LLC on her state ethics forms, even though she did disclose them on some other forms. So,
yeah, although that is presumably something the state prosecutor is looking into rather than the FBI.
But she has no political capital. I mean, it's extraordinary that the entire city council signed that statement. I mean,
yeah, because we remember the old city councils. Yeah.
Well, what other issue would all the city council reps unite on? Yeah. I mean, it's just she has no political capital whatsoever and no clear path to governing once again. So,
Dan, do you remember when Mayor Pugh was first elected, you wrote a column with 10 pieces of advice for her?
Yeah.
And number 9 was, if something feels unethical, don't do it.
Right. Yeah. Get some advice.
Yes. Yeah. It was something
because
was it?
Yeah. I also said, because as much as I enjoy seeing Sun reporters get scoops, I don't want to be reading about ethical lapses in my newspaper.
Right, well, there's an old Maryland saying that a good politician knows when to leave the room.
Right.
And obviously she was the center of attention in the room.
My wife asked me, why did you put that in your 10 pieces of advice for Mayor Pugh to have a successful term? And I said, well, it must have been something that bothered me at the time that I felt the need to say that. And it might have been the aftermath of Sheila Dixon. We're going to take a break. Herb Smith from McDaniel College with us. Andy Green, editorial page editor of The Sun, and Sun reporter Luke Broadwater. A short break. When we get back, we'll talk about President Larry Hogan.
Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking. For more audio from the Baltimore Sun, head over to baltimoresun.com/roughlyspeaking. And be sure to check out our new series, Newsroom Edition, every Friday. And while times change, the need for quality journalism doesn't, so please consider subscribing to the Baltimore Sun. Thanks again. Back to our program.
So we're back on Roughly Speaking. Dan Roderick's here with my colleagues from The Sun, Luke Broadwater and Andy Green, and from McDaniel College, my longtime friend Herb Smith, who's always provided us with lots of perspective on Maryland political history.
So that's, and sometimes national.
Yeah, and national. Yeah, but I like the Maryland stuff in particular. And I'm thinking of Albert C. Ritchie, R-I-T-C-H-I-E, who was a bachelor governor of Maryland.
Who would have been president.
Yeah.
If it, not for Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Yeah. So, I mean, he came to mind because he was talked about as a candidate for president once upon a time, back in the 1930s, right?
In 32. He was probably the second choice of a majority of Democratic delegates to the Chicago Convention.
Yeah. So here we are. It's 2019. 2020 is an election year. Of course, Donald Trump is right there. And who's going to challenge Donald Trump for the Republican nomination? You know, William Weld, former governor of Massachusetts, we hear his name. There was talk that Mitt Romney might do it. And there's been this quiet rumble about this governor from Maryland who's so popular in this blue state, this Republican governor, Larry Hogan. And what happens? He goes to New Hampshire and makes some news about along these lines this week.
Yes.
And Luke was there.
Yeah. With the Sun flew me up to cover his speech. It's a tradition in New Hampshire, a breakfast called Politics and Eggs. And so far this year, 5 presidential candidates have spoken at this breakfast. If you go in this room where it's held at the New Hampshire Institute of Politics, there's just pictures of all the presidential candidates who have come there over the years. I mean, every single one has been there. So it's an interesting place. But he gets in there, Governor Hogan does. You know, he's been very, I would say, coy about his intentions. He's always said things that are sort of vague and mildly interested, like you never say never. But he gets there and he gives his normal speech, doesn't really indicate anything too strong about his intentions. And then he gets in the press scrum afterwards with reporters from the national audiences, from international publications. I mean, the London Times was there. And he starts just ripping Donald Trump. He basically says the Mueller investigation, if it wasn't for his top aides, he would be charged with a crime. You know, he could be facing jail time.
If it wasn't for his top aides not doing what he asked them to do.
Yes, denying his orders. And then he starts to lay out how he would approach a contest to Trump. And he says, you know, I'd have to focus on these 30-something open primary states where they allow independents and Democrats to vote in the Republican primary, and it'd have to be a late campaign because I don't have as much money as him, and it's something I'm seriously considering. You know, I'm paraphrasing him right now, but that's it was a much stronger indication that he is really thinking in his mind about how this could happen. How I can make this work.
And then he said he has travel plans, right, that he's got other states he's going to visit.
Yes, that's right. He said he's going to visit 16 more states across the country. Now, some of those are for, I think, regularly scheduled visits. He's becoming the chairman of the National Governors Association, but he plans to use them to gauge public sentiment to a run.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've always thought up until now, based on reporting, that Larry Hogan wasn't really all that serious about this. He was sort of having fun with it because, you know, he hasn't launched a campaign. He's not doing the serious things Kamala Harris or, you know, other Joe Biden did today. But after hearing him talk to the National Press Corps, I think he's a lot more serious about it than I previously did.
Let me do something here. I'm going to ask Andy and Herb the same question. Let's start with Andy. So is there any path to the White House for Larry Hogan?
All right. So I wrote this up yesterday after Luke's reporting from New Hampshire, that he has what I termed a very, very, very narrow path. That you know, basically the conventional wisdom is that a primary challenge against a sitting president is bad for the challenger and for the president, that the incumbent who has been challenged has lost every time, dating back to, LBJ.
Most recent would be Jimmy Carter being challenged by Ted Kennedy in 1980.
Pat Buchanan.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, since then, nobody's challenged a sitting president, at least in a serious way. So it doesn't work, doesn't happen, weakens the party. Going to the general, people frown upon it. Now, of course, we are in extraordinary times. You never know. And although the Mueller report does not look like it is going to seriously weaken Donald Trump with his base, you just never know when something is going to happen. But in order for this to work, you need basically lightning to strike and Larry Hogan to be the one guy who is standing there ready to be the alternative. So, by my calculation, he needs Donald Trump to have some cataclysmic, earth-shaking scandal between November of 2019, when the filing deadline is for the New Hampshire primary, and early February, when that primary takes place. That's basically how it needs to happen. And then he needs to somehow win enough before the, you know, Nikki Haley's and Tom Cotton's and more likely Republican candidates get their acts together, which is difficult given that the calendar shifts from New Hampshire to less friendly Larry Hogan territory like South Carolina, or Super Tuesday is heavily weighted to the south. He'd really have to somehow hang on until like April 28th when the Maryland, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Rhode Island primaries are. So let me just say, extremely unlikely.
Well, it's probably a black swan. It's not impossible, but it's not probable. But, you know, we were saying that in 2016. We were saying that about Harry Hughes back in 1978, or Jimmy Carter early in 1976.
Oh, excuse me. When you say 2016, you're talking about Donald Trump?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was a black swan.
About.
He was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Improbable, but not impossible.
Okay. So I wonder, what is Hogan's appeal? What is appeal?
The one thing I think that will generate, I think, a run is, what does he have to lose, particularly in Maryland? Mm-hmm. He's term limited out.
Right, as governor. Yeah.
As governor. Mm-hmm. What does he have to lose? And one thing that struck me about Larry Hogan is he's got some core principles. Yeah, he truly does. And making a statement that Donald Trump does not represent the soul of the Republican Party, I think, is a message that he could deliver with considerable conviction and sincerity.
Okay, but when I say what is his appeal? Who does he appeal to? Independents might be interested, right? Some Democrats might be interested.
And, you know, not the Trumpistas, but, you know, essentially the Republicans who voted for Trump in 2016 but feel some sense of disquietude about that.
Mm-hmm. And the never-Trumpers.
And the never, which a small fragment of the Republican base.
Yeah.
But I think there's a significant number of Republicans out there that, you know, do not really follow wholeheartedly the Trump agenda. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I would note that, you know, if the economic cycle ever kicks in, the president could be in big trouble because that's basically the only plank that he can walk.
Right.
What good people point. Will say about intra-party challenges is that you can, as a challenger, have effect of helping to set the party's agenda in years ahead. So, you know, that certainly happened with Ronald Reagan versus Gerald Ford in 1976. Mm-hmm. You know, the party became Reagan's party immediately thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And to some extent happened with Buchanan against George H.W. Bush. He certainly pulled the party to the right on immigration and some other things that really kind of came into flower with Trumpism many years later. Now, is Larry Hogan running for president against Trump somehow going to set the path of the Republican Party in the future? It would certainly be swimming against a pretty hard tide at this point nationally. What could it do? It could set him up pretty well for a run against Chris Van Hollen, or if, say, Ben Cardin chooses to retire. Yeah,
this
to
is
go
interesting.
After that seat.
So 2022. Let's explain.
He's not going to endear himself to Republican voters nationally necessarily, but he would certainly endear himself to Maryland voters.
So that's interesting. You say Van Hollen would run for re-election in 2022.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
You think
that's what he's doing, Herb?
I think that's, you know, a possible, you know, motive in it. There are no immaculate conceptions in politics, and you know, it's probably one of the sidebar positive consequences that could come out of it. But also, I mean, the governor is a realist. Chris Van Hollen has not been jealous,
Yeah, I know.
It would be a very tough road.
I wanted to ask Luke something.
Sure.
So is this coming from Hogan now? Or, I mean, I know there's people around him who have been talking. He has a lot of supporters in Maryland. His high popularity, high ratings in polls. And people would talk about, you know, him running possibly for president. This has been going on for a couple of years now.
Sure.
So is more of it coming from him now? Is he actually thinking about this?
That's my takeaway from talking to him on Monday or was it Tuesday? this week has been so newsy.
Yeah.
For more than a year now, a group of Republicans that call themselves Never Trumpers have been really encouraging Larry Hogan to challenge Donald Trump. It's people like Bill Kristol. It's people like Jerry Taylor in D.C. They've been going out to lunch with him. They've been – every time they get a chance, they put a bug in his ear about it. They really are encouraging him.
Didn't Brett Stevens write a piece in the New York Times about Hogan too?
Yes, yeah. And David Brooks, others.
Oh, maybe it was David Brooks.
They really want him to run.
Okay.
And the pitch he made to the media on Tuesday was this. Donald Trump can't win. Donald Trump's approval ratings are so low, no president has ever won with these ratings. Republicans, if they run Donald Trump, will continue to lose congressional seats and will lose the presidency. So you need to wise up, Republicans. You got to pick somebody else, because no matter who the Democrats nominate, that guy is going to win right now. And that was his pitch. I don't know if that's true or not, and I just wanted to highlight two statistics that are maybe counteract this argument. Donald Trump has more than $40 million in his campaign account. Larry Hogan has no federal campaign account. Donald Trump is polling very well in New Hampshire, and Larry Hogan has 1%. So,
Yeah, I mean, your story about your trip to New Hampshire reminds me of, in not such a distant past, the Sun sent me to New Hampshire to follow around a Maryland governor by the name of Martin O'Malley, who was kind of checking out the scene up there. This was in 2008. He was a surrogate at one of these events for Hillary Clinton, who was, of course, running for president at the time. And, you know, all of his aides went up with him. It was kind of a big thing to go and see and be seen and all that. And he was somewhat overshadowed at this event by another surrogate by the name of Michelle Obama, who really kind of blew the doors off the place. And we saw how well that worked out for him when he did eventually run for president. So you know, Maryland is not Maryland is not Virginia. We are not the cradle of presidents here.
Yeah, I know. That's another thing that Herb and I have talked about before, it being a small state. And I mean, can anybody ever emerge from Maryland?
No, it's actually rather extraordinary when you think of it. But, but of course, Pennsylvania has only contributed James Buchanan. So, you know, two states that are—
Only one president. From Pennsylvania.
Yeah. James Buchanan.
And Ohio
is
way out
ahead of
everybody
worst,
still,
right? As a matter of fact. Yeah. But Ohio, you know, birthplace, Virginia birthplace.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow we got lost in the mix.
Okay. Well, Luke, you're going to keep your eye on this because if the governor starts doing some more campaigning, we're going to hear about it, right?
Yes. I was just thinking about, am I going to have to go to the editors and ask for a plane ticket to Nevada? Because I think that's his next stop.
So. No, Iowa.
Yeah.
Iowa is wonderful in January. Trust me.
And he's going to Utah, right? That's
yes. Yeah.
Okay, folks, that's it for Roughly Speaking today. This has been... little bit of a news wrap today with Luke Broadwater, Andy Green, and Herb Smith from McDaniel College. Now go to BaltimoreSun.com to get updated on what's up with Mayor Pugh and Healthy Holly. Thank you for listening. For our producer, Hallie Miller, we'll see you again next time.